On this episode of The Playbook, I have Jim Heather, CEO of the fastest growing company in the United States, Hyperice, and he's going to talk to us about what it takes to successfully run a rapidly expanding business, how to scale, and make sure that you're financed adequately. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I have, I would say, a friend, mentee, mentor, but an incredible entrepreneur, Jim Heather. And he is the CEO of Hyperice. And most people in the sports and fitness world now know Hyperice. And what I want to get to, because the brand, you're the one of the fastest growing companies in America, one of the fastest growing companies in your space, which is a difficult space. And in fact, we worked together in a variety of different companies before you were a marketing person for Hyperice. A lot of people want to know, like, how do I end up being a CEO of such a successful venture? What do you think it was in your path, the advice that you would give of, man, I just kept doing this, or you should do this in order to allow things to evolve? Because both of our careers have evolved as we're reminiscing right now.
Absolutely. And first off, thanks for having me on.
Of Big course, fan. Man. Vice versa.
Great. When I got the
mutual
note.
Mutual love fan.
Totally. When I got the note that I was coming on here, our team said, oh, you're going on Entrepreneur, Dave Meltzer. I was like, I've known Dave for 10 years. I can't wait to be on the show.
More than 10 years,
yeah,
man.
It is. More than 10 years. First time was, I think, Super Bowl, like 44 or something like that.
Exactly.
Way back in the day. But thanks for having me on. I think, you know, as a CEO, one of the first things that you want to do is make sure you're doing something you love. Right, because when you're leading a company, you're going to be involved 24/7. You just are. You're constantly thinking about what the next move is, how you're going to restructure your staff or position your company a little bit better to have a competitive edge, or what kind of moves you're making internationally. So you got to make sure that you're passionate about it, because your passion is contagious and your employees and your team members are going to feed off your energy. So there's a lot of elements actually in your book that kind of touch on this. But if you have that energy and you have that drive continually, your team around you is going to be better and they're continue to evolve. So I think that's really important. A lot of people, if you can really get into what you're doing, that passion's contagious.
And, you know, as far as getting into what you're doing, you started in, you know, when we were working together in the helmet space, mm-hmm. and you were more on the sales and marketing side.
Yep.
Very, very passionate about the technology and what you were doing. You were what I call the law of Goya, right? You were a guy who got off his ass. You were first one in. You were everywhere.
Yep.
You know, and I remember Chris Del Conte, who's the athletic director of UT.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest athletic director in America. And he talked about, you know, he was at fairs in Washington for Washington State, going to raise money for the swim team at Washington State. I kind of analogize what you did. You know, you were traveling everywhere, you know, fitting helmets.
Yep.
And then you move into this, you know, startup,
mm-hmm.
and we're director of marketing. Is that the position you took when you moved
over?
Yeah,
I was a VP.
A VP of marketing. Yep. But there's only a few people at the company at the time.
Yep.
What was the transition like? Because I know it's difficult. You know, here you are at a VP level,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, eventually you became the CEO.
Yep.
And it's a huge difference. It's like when you, and you know this as a CEO, I always worry when I have like my top salesperson want to get into management, because I run that risk that I go from losing my top salesperson and getting a horrible manager. Was there any fear that, you know, going from management into the executive role, like I'm going to lose my great VP and end up with like this unseasoned newbie as my CEO?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that was an area, you know, I kind of always looked at it, you know, actually when I was in graduate school, I did a dual emphasis in marketing and finance, and it was really there where I fell in love with case studies on businesses and looking at ways that companies could turn around, or why some companies were more dynamic than others and what made them special. Was it the leadership? Was it the team? Was it the product and service? So really kind of diagnosing that really interests me. So throughout my career, even in the concussion space, I knew that was going to be a massive category. Concussion from 2004 to 2011, and even now, was a very, very hot topic. and it still is.
Right.
So for me, I was always looking at...
Because everybody has a brain, by the way.
Exactly. And we want to keep those intact, for right. sure. So for me, it was always about, you know, what market spaces could be disruptive and where could I make the greatest impact so I could affect change in a positive way. So the concussion space was really important to me at the time because I thought we could be the company that kind of repositioned technology and the importance of head protection within the football space. And that's where we met and we had a great trajectory there. So yeah. I think to answer your question, going into Hyperice, I knew... You know, they let me know that I would come into the company as an executive and then move into the leadership role. Like, okay, I knew good. That was an opportunity.
Did you negotiate for that or did they offer that?
They kind of alluded to it.
Okay.
Like, we want you to come in here for 6 months. We want you to get a little bit of experience with the team, understand the market a little bit more. And when I got there, there was a lot of great elements in the company. Like, the branding was great. The founder was really good at branding, very smart guy on the marketing side. The business dynamic and the strategy just wasn't right. And so we had to make a lot of shifts to change the company from an equipment company into a technology company. And that was one of the biggest things that we did. And I think a lot of the stuff that happened early in my career, just in going through two different startups in the concussion space, one being kind of a failure, I'd say, the other one being successful, but maybe a double. Yeah. And kind of taking learnings from those experiences and then applying to them. And one of the biggest ones was the leadership piece. Like, I think that is so core as being a chief executive. Like, you have to constantly be tailoring your craft.
Oh, gosh.
And adapting and making sure that the team around you is equally as motivated and they have room to grow and expand. So those were all things I learned kind of being in a couple startups where maybe that wasn't great. Maybe the leadership just across the board in management wasn't as good as it could have been. I'm adapting that in different ways.
Yeah, it's funny because I tell people all the time with leadership, there's two areas of expertise when they talk about how you come in. One is the employees and the other is the overhead. And they're completely different and they're in conflict with each other. And it was one of the harder lessons I learned as I became a younger executive. We were about the same age, kind of, as we went there to, you know, how do I, you know, align those? One, I'd be amiss to ask this because it is an entrepreneur show. One of the biggest questions that exists today for entrepreneurs, whether, you know, number one, I should go to college, two, I should go to graduate school. Now, you and I both are well-seasoned, educated people. We had surrounded ourselves with the Harvard and Penn people for our careers and the Berkeley people, of course, like Lee. But I don't ever ask anyone, nor do I care, whether you think you should go to college. What I'd rather ask you is, knowing what you know today and the economy where it's at today and the traditional institution that education is today, what things or variables should an entrepreneur look at about figuring out, should I go to college or graduate school?
Great question. I think when I applied, I always look at how it affected me because I did an MBA and I did marketing and finance. And what elements of that did I apply and do I apply and how did it help me get to the stage I was at? I think for me, the case studies and looking at other businesses and learning from those was really important for me because it built a framework on how I thought about companies. It was kind of built within me as looking at, okay, I have a P&L, I have team, I have market positioning, and how can I kind of put those together to create a great company, right? So I think those elements were really important. I also think, at least in my experience, it helped me secure a executive leadership role. Being young, having that credential just allowed a board to say, hey, I'm not really sure, maybe this person doesn't have as much experience as we want, but okay, they have an MBA and they have great education, so I feel good, I can check the box.
Right.
So that piece of it helped. I think there's great people in our organization who didn't go to graduate school, some that didn't go to college, and they're exceptional. So I don't think it's mandatory by any means, but I think it did help. At least it helped me being young and kind of positioning my own personal brand along the way and aligning with some credentials.
A little bit more difficult question because I've figured this out for myself and I have my own kids. Mm-hmm. But a lot of kids and adults have to pay for their own education, right? Mm-hmm. So it means either take loans, work three jobs, whatever it takes. I believe for me, there's a threshold of $100,000 that if I had to pay for that, that's about as deep as into debt that I'd go to get my degrees.
Right.
And so either I had to get a scholarship, but I won't go deeper. Is there an advice that you give economically, because it is an economic decision, you know, even to be a doctor, I wouldn't go $500,000 in debt to become a doctor. It doesn't make business sense to me. Mm-hmm. You know, as the MBA in finance, is there kind of a number that people should kind of look at and say, you know what, if you can't get your education for this much of investing in yourself, maybe you should figure something else out?
I would say if I put a number on that, it might be slightly higher than 100. Mm-hmm. I would say I'm partially biased because in my experience, it really did help me.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, $120,000, $140,000 over time, if you're getting the growth trajectory that you think you really can, it doesn't become an issue. I think I still have $50,000 of student loans. Nice. And I'm 38. Yeah. Right? And I'm just deferring those. I mean, I could pay those off, but I think you have a good interest
debt.
Rate.
Right? It's good debt as you get older and you can afford it.
Totally, totally. So I never look back at that and say it was a bad decision financially. And I paid for it myself personally. I didn't get any help when I was going through that process. So there is a level of like, kind of ownership in it, where I think if you really believe in yourself and you want to invest in the future and you think that's going to help you achieve where you want to go, it's worth it.
One of the things that I've seen, and you know, as a fan of yours, someone who watches and is always here to help as well, and you have always been there to help me, but the HR side of being a leader, mm-hmm. of being a CEO, you know, you have surrounded yourself with the right people. You know, you're able to attract that talent. What are some of the things that you look for, you know, in hiring? You guys are expanding to New York, you're expanding all over, you know, growing so fast. It's difficult to recruit people, but more importantly, pick the right people, because there's no great science to it. What are some of the things that you look for to help other individuals grow their career in sports?
Such an important question. And it's, you know, if you don't have the right team, it just takes one or two bad seeds to affect the culture of an entire company.
Great point. So say that one more time for everyone listening. All it takes
is one or two bad seeds to completely change the culture of a company. It's that important. We take our hiring so seriously. And actually, like, personally, I've hired every employee we've had this year. I think we hired 11 or 12 because it's that important, especially in small teams. So for us, you know, we look for a few things. One, aptitude for learning. We want people that want to learn, because especially in our space, this recovery tech mobility space, which has never existed before, we don't necessarily need somebody with years of experience. And there may not be a person that exists with years of experience because it's a new category. So as long as you're willing to learn and you're willing to put in the effort, that's huge. The second one is team. You have to be able to collaborate and operate as a unit. And we actually have all of our goals and objectives as a company are tied to team goals. So everybody is working together. There's no silos within the company. It's a very open environment. You can contribute any idea from any department. Some of our best ideas have come from departments completely out of, you know, what they're contributing to,
which is great.
Which is awesome. So that's another piece. I think, you know, having good energy is really important as well. And just kind of being less of a, we call it complain train, and having more of energy bus so that people can constantly uplift others if they're down. That's a really important piece. And then I think the last one is we need people who have the passion for what we're doing and really feel like they're willing to learn and be adaptable. Because things change quickly, and if you have someone who's adaptable and enthusiastic and passionate, generally they're going to figure it out. So those are all really important elements for us.
That's awesome. Now, you know, a lot of people talk about, I'd rather have an A team than an A product. But in your case, it's really interesting because you do have an A team, and
right.
you have surrounded yourself with the right people. But, you know, your product really thrives. You know, it has taken on its own energy, its own brand, its own life. I love the fact that, you know, being in this industry that I'm in, that people bring your company up to me all the time, whether it's from, you know, my TV show or podcast or just doing business with a variety of different people in the fitness world. What do you think makes your product thrive like it does? That people, it's kind of like AirPods, you know, it's like, kind of looks weird, but everyone's there. Have you tried these? You know, and everyone that has tried the Hypervolt or the Hypersphere, you know, and it's so funny because on my set, we had the Hypersphere.
I saw that.
And that's the first time I tried it, right? And of course, I laughed when I saw it because I saw it being used, but I've never used one. Mm-hmm. And literally, I was there and the universe worked. I'm like, I got to get one of these.
Yep.
And then like the next week, I got an email from the PR people. I'm like, Jim's family, I want them on. This is amazing. But what is it you think, you know, because you are the CEO, what makes it thrive?
Yeah, and it's interesting. Our whole model, like our whole business model of the company is very experiential because the products change the physiology of the human body. And that's what's so interesting about it. Like the effect that you have when the products touch the body is something you want to tell others about. It's very viral, but it's not a fad viral, right? This is a trend that's shifting, and it's going to be here to stay in a very big way. So our whole model is really find ways to deliver experiences with the products. And not a lot of companies, you couldn't create the same model with other companies with a protein powder or a laptop case because it doesn't have that viral effect that you alluded to. So we've really, you know, vibration and percussion, there's a lot of science behind it, increasing circulation, relieving tension, you know, increasing range of motion, relieving pain in a lot of instances. But we know that we just need to get people to touch and feel the products because there's scientific evidence that it's beneficial. But most importantly, it feels good.
It works.
You get that experience immediately. So we're doubling down on that.
Yeah, that's really smart. Now, yep. One of the questions a lot of people don't ask, and only because I've experienced myself, in my 30s, I was CEO of the world's first smartphone, and we had extraordinary growth, mm-hmm. fastest growing company just like yours, and the company outgrew me. For you, as the company grows and you get up to, let's say, $1 billion company, your perspective as a young CEO, do you... move over? Do you get mentorship? What do you do? Because there's no situational knowledge. You know, I always say it's 30 million, then 100 million, then 300, but 300 to a billion. Each of those are all different ball games. Do you have a strategy to either stay or to get help?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, for me personally, I thrive on challenges. Like, I'm the best when things are tough. And that's when I came into Hyperice, company was losing a lot of money.
Yeah.
Strategy wasn't right. I always joke, if I would have seen the real financials when I came on board, I might not have taken the opportunity. But I got thrown into
the mix. It sounded good, right?
It was. And we turned it around. We righted the ship. It took a lot of discipline. But for me personally, you know, I love business. It's a hobby for me, just like you. I mean, you and I are wired the same.
And exactly,
that, like, right. It is a hobby. People say, what are your hobby? I like golf too, but I love business.
Yeah.
I read 50 books. You probably read 100.
Yeah, listen more than read now, but yeah.
I've read both your books.
Oh, they're awesome. Read
part of my readings over the last 24 months. But yeah, I think for me, I thrive in challenging environments, and I like going places that I haven't been before and trying to learn and adapt and create. And I'll make some mistakes along the way, but I'll learn from them and, you know, grow from them. So I think going from where we are now to, you know, $1 billion company in the future or beyond, that stuff excites me. To get there, I'm going to have an amazing team around me. So we're definitely going to be bringing in talent as we grow and continue to find people that can, you know, deliver great expectations and deliver great performances and have great experience. But I do think kind of going where we haven't gone before is something that personally I'm really excited about.
That's awesome. Last question, as an entrepreneur, one of the things I think that makes you so successful, one of the reasons that I had my eye on, even when you went to Hyperice, I'm like, why don't you hire Jim as my COO instead of hired one of your best friends?
Yep.
Because you both were at the same company. But literally, I was like, you're my kind of people. But what it is I think one of the interesting things, if you could share your perspective, is things don't go the way you plan, right? Both of our careers. And some people take... you know, the changes that occur in our careers, whether you're let go, laid off, fired, or the company goes broke, something always happens. But there's people like you and others that it's a stepping stone and a setup for something even bigger. Mm-hmm. And like you said, your optimistic view, what do you think it is, or advice you give for the perception that you should have? Look, I'm in a job and it's not going like it should. You know, what was that mindset that you had going into the next opportunity that, you know, really is a huge home run?
Right. I think that you have to learn how to not dwell on past situations and let those affect your psyche too much, but take the positive learnings. And in some cases, you just have to move on. Like, you have to say, this didn't work the way I wanted it to. I'm going to own it because I was responsible for it. It's not anybody else's fault. Like, I'm going to take responsibility. I was a chief executive. At the end of the day, I'm the one who signed the deal or whatever it may be. And think about, how do I learn from that and apply it to the next experience and be better? And that's something that you constantly have to do. Like, we're doing incredibly well. Our company is on fire right now. We're one of the fastest growing companies, et cetera. But I know there's going to be significant challenges ahead. And I know that we have to prepare for those. And when those happen, I'm going to take a bunch of knowledge on different ventures that I have potentially not succeeded as well on and apply what I learned there to get through those experiences. And that's why I think it is important to have people that are experienced in fast-growing businesses, because they've been through those adverse situations and they know how to handle them with poise, because everybody feeds off that. And that's a big part of being a leader as well, is being able to handle the adversity and kind of keep the group motivated and moving in the right direction.
As well as being a defensive back. That's probably what you played.
Very true. That is what I played.
Of course, the great CEOs play defensive back because you've got to have a short memory.
Totally.
They call me toast for nothing. anyway, this is Jim Heather. He is the CEO of Hyper Ice, the Hyper Volt, the Hyper Sphere. Who knows what Hyper is next coming? But you got to check out the company, the products, and the people that endorse it. It's incredible. There's a reason why they are one of the fastest growing companies in all of America. And you are looking at one of the fastest maturing and successful CEOs, Jim Heather with Hyper Ice. I'm Dave Meltzer, Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.